Good morning, and welcome to the School for Successful Ranching. My name is Katie Kemp, and I'll be moderating this session today. At this time, I ask that you place your cell phones on silent, and please remove your hats. There's a table in the back of the room where you place your hats if you wish. We would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors for the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and commitment to producer education. They have small displays set up in the hallway on this floor, and we ask that you visit their booths and the expo and say thank you. We couldn't do this program without them. Sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Dow AgroSciences, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Merck Animal Health, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, Bayer Microtechnologies, Deacero, Texas Range Minerals, Neogen GeneSeq, Rabo AgriFinance, Texas Beef Quality Assurance, and Silveris Insurance Group. If you are a new TSCRA member, we are holding a new member orientation today at 1 p.m. in room 101. We hope that you can come learn more about what TSCRA does for you and the cattle industry. Our first presentation is Developing a Job Description for a Cow, presented by Dr. Frank Ousley, the department head of the Department of Animal Science and Veterinary Technology at Tarleton State University. Dr. Ousley joined the Tarleton faculty in July 2015. He spent the last 24 years as an extension specialist with Auburn University and the Alabama Cooperative Extension System, focused on food animal quality assurance, animal care and well-being, and environmental stewardship. Dr. Ousley completed his PhD at Texas Tech University, his bachelor's and master's of science at Texas A&M University. He was born in San Antonio and grew up in Copperas Cove. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Ousley.
And I don't know what y'all were expecting when you came. I told somebody I can't speak from a stand. That's kind of like putting a dog on a leash. I don't particularly care for it. So I'll do a lot of walking around. How many of you have ever hired somebody? There's a few of you. How easy is that? Have you ever thought about that when you're looking at buying a cow? So the background behind my little starting point here is I spent about 15 years before I moved to Tarleton as a BQA coordinator for the state of Alabama. Little different than Texas, not quite as diversified as Texas, but a lot of cow-calf, a little bit of stocker. So we focused a lot of time on cow-calf. One of the things we learned real quick was we had some problems in the cow herd. Whether it be drought, whether it be water availability, forage availability, we had a lot of thin cows. Body condition scores, I won't say what they were, but not quite what we wanted them to be. So we started a program called Cull Cow 101. Of course, I immediately got in trouble because that is not politically correct. We have market cows, not cull cows. No, these were cull cows. They were at the sale barn because somebody didn't want them. They had been kicked out of their herd. We started a program to try to see if we could address the issue of low body condition. Why did we have body condition score twos coming to the sale barn? It looked bad. It made the industry look bad. We did the first couple of rounds of programs. We did them at sale barns. We would actually take folks back into the cow pens, and we'd sort cows. And what we found out, the body condition score twos weren't the problem. It was a body condition score eights and a handful of nines. So we started asking, which cow made the person the most money, the body condition score eight or the body condition score two? Well, that was a time when cows were bringing about $1 a pound. You bring in an 1,800-pound cow with a body condition score 8, that's a pretty good paycheck. You bring in a 950-pound cow with a body condition score 2, they were bringing about 60 cents. Big difference. Well, on the surface, it looked like the best buy, the best deal, was the fat cow. Then you start calculating how much feed went into her. What did she do? Had she done anything? Most of them didn't even have an udder. So what came out of that was, where do cows fit? What should we be looking for in our cow herd? I'm not a geneticist. I'm not an animal breeder. We'll leave that to Dr. Pascal. I do have a degree in nutrition, but it's swine nutrition. in the middle of Sunbelt Agricultural Exposition one year when a couple of vets and I were doing a cattle handling demo. Some guy hollered out from the back of the room, "What in the is that hog man up there talking to us about working cows?" And I said, "Have you ever driven a hog? Cows are easy. As long as they got a place to go, they're going to go. Hogs, they're going to do everything in their power to do something opposite." So anyway, that's my background. I look at things a little different. The worst evaluation I ever got, I thought was pretty good. The department head told me I needed to crawl back in the box. You know, normally they say you got to get out of the box. They told me I had to get back in the box. So I'm going to take this kind of a flippant attitude. This is actually an exam question, and that's the rest of the story. I use it in a couple of classes. Some of my faculty have kind of picked up on it, and the students are beginning to get into it because it is kind of a different approach of where cows come from. Mr. Deming made this quote one time, "It is difficult to manage what is not measured." One of the first things we have to know is, where are we? My favorite slide, and I didn't bring it this time, been using it for most of my career, is a big letter B. Now, I used to do it on a chalkboard. We don't have chalkboards anymore. And I'd draw a big B, and then I'd get a volunteer to come up and draw a line from A to B. How do you go from A to B if you don't know where A is? But how many times if you ask, "I need to have a better calf crop," "So what do you have now?" "Well, it's not good enough." "What is it?" "Don't know." So we need to know where we're at. The obvious things are cows are important to cow-calf production. Without profit, cows tend to go away. Not all the time. All cows are not created equal. Excuse me. Convenience store donut for breakfast. And there's rarely a perfect cow. Not rarely. There's not such, no such thing as a perfect cow. Is there? So every animal is going to be a little different. Every farm, every ranch is going to be a little different. The idea here is, how do we match them together? What thought process do you need to go through? I'm spending too much time over on this side of the room. Y'all going to feel left out. So what thought process do you need to go to make this decision? And that's what it is. I really hope that you are going to teach yourselves today. My idea is just throw some things out and get you thinking, just like I do in a class of seniors. I'm not going to cover a lot of new material. I just want you to apply it a little bit better. What's the not so obvious? What is the goal of the farm or ranch? Where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 50 years? What's the purpose? Why are you there? Is it a hobby? Is it a tax write-off? Is it a way of life? Is it a job? What is it? And what are the available resources? When was the last time you actually sat down and inventoried what you had? Everything. What counts? What can you use? So we look at inventory and resources, and again, this is, I am a retired extension specialist. I think we were already talking earlier. We don't have a whole lot of really new stuff. We just take the old stuff and repackage it a little bit. I've used this slide probably 20 years, and it still fits. We assess our management practices. What's that got to do with the cow? Well, the kind of cow you need needs to match what you're doing and what you're capable of doing. Develop a plan for improvement. Where are you? Where do you want to be? And how do you get there? Again, going from A to B. Where does it fit? It's simple. How many of you have thought about it, though? Where do I want to be in 5 years? Do you have a roadmap? Do you have something written down somewhere? So we look at resources, people. Notice cattle aren't the top. Without people, without a market, who are we selling to? What are we selling? And, you know, I go back one of the, another, again, pilfered comment. I can remember a beef cattle short course one year when the speaker talked about the difference between a sale barn and an auction market and asked the audience, what's the difference? Well, everybody started rattling off difference here and difference there, and really the structure's the same. The facility's the same. The difference between a sale barn and an auction market is in the mind of the person selling the cattle. When you go in with hat in hand saying, what do you think I'm going to get today? That's a sale barn. When you pick up the phone and call them and say, I've got a load of seven weight steers sorted, what color, when's going to be the best time for me to bring them? That's an auction market. So what is the customer? Pastures, land, water, what resources do you have? I could remember a drought going through the southeast one time. We had cattle going to market, again, very thin, and we had plenty of grass. We didn't have any water. First thing that dried up was creeks, rivers, and streams. And we were totally dependent on surface water for probably 70% of our water resources and livestock. Creeks dried up. Cattle didn't get any water. They had to go to market. It hurt. So that is a resource we have to look at. And probably the last thing is that ability to balance these resources with the needs of the farm or the ranch to achieve that financial success. One of the biggest frustrations I had, and again, I am going to regret that donut. Oh, boy, it is tearing me up. One of the most difficult things is I look at things from numbers. I look at things from financial. I'm not an economist, but that's just the folks that I've worked with for 30-plus years. And then I talk to somebody and say, well, you know, I really don't care about the profit side. I just want to do a better job. Well, if you want to do a better job and it's not profit-driven, why? What's the purpose? We met in another little anecdote at the end of it to make this work. We were told at the beginning of when BQA really started taking off that if it wasn't for all these small folks, quality of our cattle would be a whole lot better. Did you ever hear that, Joe? Everybody did. So we did a survey. There were 28 sale barns in the state of Alabama, and we did a survey in 26 of them. Had well over 1,000 results. And part of the questions were, what management practices did they use? The most progressive ones we had less than 15 cows. The small people wasn't a problem. But then we started looking at who those small folks were. They were typically retirees. They'd come from a business, an industry, something like that. They weren't necessarily profit-driven, but they were business-driven. They looked at it as a business. They operated as a business. They wanted all the information up front. They made a plan. They executed the plan and sold calves at the end. The problem is they weren't big enough to really have a big impact. So the small ones weren't the problem. They had that ability to balance those resources. And so really, the order is not important. Every one of those things is very important when we start looking at writing this job description. So here's a question, and I normally would not have used this, but we had a graduate student give a talk about 2 weeks ago on relationship between nutrition and reproduction in a cow. When he got through, I asked him the question, should a cow match the available resources, or should the resources match the cow? And he's a pretty, if he had gone by the Tarleton booth yesterday, he was there. And his response was, both. That's the guts. That's the presentation. Should the cow match the resources, or should the resources match the cow? How many times have we expended all of our available resources trying to keep our cows in good flesh? To me, that's an indication the cow might not be the right one. We're chasing a market. We're chasing something. Worked with a fairly large seed stock producer that was selling crossbred heifers. And they were marketing about 1,000, not quite 1,000, three-way cross heifers a year. Well, that means if genetics is right, that means they had about 1,000 crossbred steers to sell. And they were breeding Brangus bulls to tiger stripe cows to produce heifers. Had a problem. The steers were getting docked. They couldn't understand why. Why can't I get full market price for my steers? They're really good animals. I said, prove it. How do I do that? I said, retain ownership on a load. You know, put your money where your mouth is. If they're that good, prove it. I'm not going to do that. I can't afford that. I said, if you're not willing to sell them, why do you expect somebody else to be willing to buy them? Bottom line was, they were selling heifers at a premium. They were making money. They were making profit. And the steers were a byproduct. And so really what they had to understand was the steers were not the things they were marketing. They could have, but they were raising heifers. So they had a system, again, trying to match, and had a pretty good plan in place. So let's look at exactly what do you need in a cow. What's the most important thing a cow should do? Do what? Have a calf. Does she need to have a calf every year? Can you think of a scenario where she doesn't need to have a calf every year? I can think of several. Talked to a guy once. He said his cows are there, so he'd have something to look at when he looked out the window in the morning drinking coffee. He couldn't care less if he ever had a calf. Having a calf every year was not a criteria for him. They had to be pretty. They had to look pretty in that belly-deep grass. Okay. But yes, having a calf every year should be one of the first things we look at. Do they have that capability? You're going to have a hard time taking that picture. I am not going to stand still. So performance. Does the cow need to produce upper two-third choice calves every time? Should that be the cow's responsibility? Should we be focused on carcass quality when we're putting together this job description for a cow? Well, it depends. What's your market? What's your plan? I kind of like the bulls for that. I'd like a cow that can have a calf every year and do a pretty good job and do some other things. What else does that cow need to do? Does she need to be efficient? Does she need to make the best use of available resources? Does she need to be able to eat the bark off a mesquite tree? Depends. In my part of the world now, yeah, that'd help. Mesquite beans aren't too bad sometimes of the year. Where I came from, we didn't have them. They were belly deep in Bermuda grass. I'm going to avoid this side of the room. That's where the camera is. So efficiency. What about cost? Is the most expensive cow the best cow? I watched one sell the other day for, I won't say exactly how much, but that cow brought more than my truck for us. And then somebody said, well, you want the cow or the calf? I'll take them both. Do we need $100,000 pairs? Do we go to the sale barn and buy somebody else's? It depends on what you're looking for. Cost is, so what are their requirements? What's it going to take to keep them around? Do we then evaluate a cow as an employee? Now, one of the things that, and I've been on the animal welfare side of things way too long, and one of the things that really hurts us is when humans try to put human attributes on animals. We talk about smart, we talk about stupid, we talk about mean, we talk about all of this. We apply human traits, human phrases to describe our animals. And to me, that's wrong because that plays in the hands of a lot of folks that don't like us. They're not humans. They don't really reason very well. They're driven by three things: food, shelter, sounds kind of crude, but sex. As long as they've got those three things, they're going to be pretty much happy. That's the driving force. The ability to maintain themselves, the ability to protect themselves, and the ability to reproduce. So should we have a job description? We've already talked about a couple of things, so where do we start? First thing, anybody ever seen a website call or an outfit called Indeed? Look at it, I-N-D-E-E-D. Look at it sometime. It's one of the big job force deals. They've got some really neat things about how to hire an employee. It fits pretty well. I'd love to copy it, but it's copyrighted, so I couldn't use it on my slides. But it fits with how do you pick a cow. What do we want their responsibilities to be? What are their duties? Somebody said have a calf every year. I think that's a fairly common one. There's a few exceptions. Anybody that doesn't think they need to have a calf every year? Now the hard question, how many years? How long should they last? Somebody told me the other day, average life expectancy of a cow was 17 years. I don't know where. I haven't seen many where the average life expectancy was 17. What should they be? 5 years? 4 years? 10 years? 12 years? The rule of thumb I've always used has been 12. Why 12? When you look at where a cow really starts dropping, where they start dropping off on performance, again, typically, if everything's right, you start seeing a drop after about 8 years, and then you start seeing significant drops after 10. Does a location make a difference? Huge difference. For some reason, it doesn't hold up as well on sandy soils as it do on clay soils. Why is that? Any ideas? Minerals, yes, but not for the reason you're thinking. Not so much lameness. Sand. Teeth. Break the mouth down. Grind their teeth off. And again, in the southeast, where we did have a lot of variation in that, cows that were on the sandy type soils, really we were, I mean, if we could get 10 years out of them, they were fantastic. Typically, they're going to be closer to 8. When we had them on, again, same type of animal, same level of performance, get them on the heavier clay soils, and we might be able to stretch it into 14 years. So how long should they, so we need a calf every year, and we need them to do it for about 12 years. That's a job. That's responsibilities. That's their duties. What do they need to do it with? Air? You know, sometimes we'd like for that to happen. It'd be great not to buy hay. It'd be great not to have to fertilize grass. It'd be great to just kind of turn them in here and say, get after it. But that doesn't work. So don't they have to be able to use what we have? Would you expect the same requirements in South Texas as you would in East Texas? Would the ideal cow for South Texas be the ideal cow for East Texas? It could be. Probably won't be, though. A little different conditions. What are their responsibilities? So they have to have a cow, a calf. They need to do it for a period of time. And they need to be able to do it with the resources that we have. Now, all of a sudden, go back to slide number 3. Do you know what resources you have? What do you need to make use of? Depending on where you're at, sometimes it's not forages. Anybody ever fed byproducts? Any kind, pick one. Flavor of the month. Technically, cottonseed is a byproduct, depending on time of year. Soybean meal can be a byproduct, depending on the market for oil. Candy, bread, sky's the limit. I've got analysis of most all of them. Pecans, peanuts, soy hulls, those are byproducts. Can be fantastic supplements for a cow. You don't have to focus totally on the available resources on land. Sometimes if you have resources like byproducts, you can afford to do a little bit more with a cow. You see where I'm going now? It's available. That's the thought process. So they need to be able to do very well with what we have available. They need to have a calf. They need to have a calf every year, and they need to do it under our conditions. What about weather? Does it make a difference? In Stephenville right now, no, it don't make any difference. I mean, we had an ice storm 3 weeks ago, and it's supposed to hit 90 today. You know, 60-degree temperature swings are almost a normal. I don't know how you'd pick a cow to match those conditions other than one that can grow hair real quick and lose it the next day. And again, that's not going to happen. We're not going to air condition the barn for them, even though I have seen some air-conditioned trailers, but those were a different kind of cattle. And that's not what we're in here to talk about. But they need to match the conditions. Can they handle the environment? There's places where slick-haired cows are the ones that we almost have to have. And I cringe every time I hear a breeder talking about, well, you know, we need to get the leather off those cows. No, you don't. That's what it's there for. Find something else. Don't get the leather off. Find something else. That's a way to dissipate heat. And when you're in heat and humid, and heaven forbid, you put heat, humidity, and fescue in the same pot, which thank goodness we don't have much of. But you get endophyte infected fescue along with heat and humidity, and you don't have a little bit of air in the cow, they're not going to perform. They can't. They've got to have heat tolerance. Most of Texas, we've got to have some ability to dissipate heat one way or another. Does it affect market? Again, one of the next things, they have to have a calf. They have to have it every year, hopefully for 10 or 12 years, and they've got to do it with our resources. But they also have to produce a calf we can sell. What is profit? Anybody know? Definition of profit, real easy. What comes out exceeds what goes in. How many times do we focus on what comes out and forget about what goes in? I had a young county, well, he wasn't a young county agent. He's my age, so he's a young county agent, telling me one time that his farmers could not afford to have Brahmin influence in their cows because the dock was too big at the sale barn. Well, there was a definite discount at the sale barn. But he also had cattle in an area that was hot, humid, sandy, and fescue. All of the things that could actually wipe out a cow herd. And he was telling them to use English and Continental breeding exclusively. Predominantly Continental. They were growing elephants. Big, heavy frame, heavy muscle. Because that's what the market wanted. But if the cows can't hold up, what good is the market? So they've got to produce it, but they've got to produce something we can sell. They've got to be able to handle it. We often forget in a cow herd, we are going to breed them to a bull. And a bull, does a bull provide half the genetics? Yeah. But can the bull have a bigger impact than that? Does the genetics of the bull complement the genetics of the cow? Do we look at bulls when we're selecting bulls to complement our cows? Or do we look at them for, I don't know, flavor of the month, whatever you want to call it? You know, everything's right as long as you're black, right? Don't want to make anybody mad, but I see somebody shaking their head. But I know what he's thinking about. So, again, responsibilities and duties, that's what they have to do. Qualifications, they have to be able to do it with our resources. They have to be able to do it the way we need it done. We don't want to ship them to the sale barn every 3 or 4 years. We don't want to have to get rid of a cow because she can't maintain her condition. We don't want to have to get rid of a cow because she doesn't have a calf. Yeah, they bring good money at the sale barn, but so what if they haven't done anything for us? So there's a certain set of qualifications and skills they have to have. We've got to be able to get them. And they have to be able to perform under our conditions. So where does it fall apart? I really expected somebody to be asking questions by now. I know I'm not talking that good. So where does it fall apart? What are our causes of failure? Anybody got an idea? When does a cow blow up? When does a cow not perform? What's the cause? Pick one. Somebody in this room has got to have one reason why a cow will not perform. Okay, disease. Did you say strep or stress? Stress, okay. Stress, big time. My favorite test question, though, and I tell the kids at the beginning of the semester, this will be on your exam. Define no-stress cattle handling in 5 words or less. Can anybody do that? It cannot be done. We don't want it to be done. How in the world is that cow going to go where we want them to go if they're sitting in our back pocket? One of the causes of failures is we forget about temperament. We don't want to get hurt. We want safe cows. We want pets. We want bottle babies. No, we want cows. They got to know what they're doing. I want them to be a little afraid of me. I'm not going to beat them or anything. But when I walk in the pen, I want them to know I'm a predator. I'm not a prey. I want them to run away. And if y'all listened to the handling or went through the handling demo Friday night, you heard a lot of that same thing. The idea that we have a good facility is we give them an out. And as long as we give them an escape, that's a good thing. So stress is one. What's another cause for failure? When I misunderstood him, I said disease. Do we have any control over that? Yeah, we'll get to it in a little bit. Hope if I have time. Anybody else? Nutrition. You're not a veterinarian, are you? Okay, good. Because first thing I hear out of a vet's mouth, and this is no slight on them. Some very good friends of mine, phenomenal beef cattle veterinarians, it's always nutrition. And they're 100% right, it is. Because what happens to the nutrient requirements of a cow when she gets sick? They go up. The easiest animal to maintain is a perfectly healthy animal. They're not expending nutrients to fight off disease. We don't have perfectly healthy animals. We're always going to have that. So nutrition, from a lot of different reasons. Nutrition from a stressed animal. Stress also increases the nutrient requirements. What does stress do to intake? Decreases it. What does disease do to intake? decreases it. So everything that we do, all of these failures, increase the nutrient requirements and decrease intake. Yes, I'm a nutritionist. It's all nutrition, Joe. So what else? Water. Got to have water. If we don't have water, what happens if they don't have anything to drink? What happens if they've got plenty to drink, but something's wrong with it? Probably one of the most frustrating cases I ever worked with was a case of blue algae. And we really didn't know it was there. Hopefully it's not around here. I got a feeling there's some in East Texas. But there's one strain of blue. I don't remember what it is now. Toxic as all get out. Cows walk down to the water. Kind of, you'd think they could sort of wait, you know, just kind of move it out of the way. They sucked it down. They moved about 10 feet and died. Awful. So water, the availability of it. What about, what is ideal water quality for a cow? What does the book say? It says an adequate supply of safe water, clean water. What's clean water? When you come up with an answer, I'd love to know. I've been working there 20 years, and I still have not found a definition. What is clean water? The prettiest water I ever looked at. Rotted the soles off my rubber boots. Had a pH of about 3.6. The E. coli couldn't grow in it. It was so bad. But it was pretty. It was clean. It was crystal clear. And it was toxic. So having a supply of water that the cows can use, what else? We're looking for failures. What else can cause a cow to fail? There's one thing nobody's mentioned, and it's probably the number one cause of failure. What's that?
Bad management.
Us. Bad management. Sometimes it's not necessarily bad management. Sometimes it's no management. A good friend of mine did this for probably about as long, a little bit longer than I did. Said the biggest problem with the cow herd is most of them are owned, or most of the farms, the owner's never there. Absentee ownership. How many of you look at your cows every day? A few. There's places in Texas where you can't look at them every day unless you have a drone or a helicopter, and that's expensive. But do you look at them frequently? What have we done? We bought a cow. We've written our job description, what we want her to do. We've gone through her responsibilities. We've gone through her qualifications and skills. We've got the perfect cow for us. But then we don't do our job. So another cause for failure. We've got people, nutrition. Is nutrition a people issue? Sometimes. Is it possible to produce cows without hay? Can you maintain a cow herd without a bale of hay? Be done. Can we graze cows in Texas 12 months out of the year? Depends on where you're at. If you've got the crops to do it with, you can. Again, that's a matter of matching conditions. So if we summarize it, and this is an hour. And I told Stacy, I said, this isn't an hour talk unless there's a discussion. I've said my piece, and like I said, what I'm hoping y'all do is start thinking. Know what you have. And I don't mean just think you know what you have. Write it down. What are my available resources? Do an inventory of the farm or ranch. Land, facilities, livestock, people. What kind of people? We used to tell folks when you're working cattle and reducing stress, have an adequate supply of skilled labor. How many of you have ever worked cattle with folks that didn't know what they were doing? You didn't work cattle very well. How many of you ever got mad working cows? There was a young man, when I was in school that used to tell us, when you lose your temper with an animal, all you're doing is admitting that the animal is smarter than you are. And my response was, this place is covered up in geniuses. They're awfully smart. And I mentioned, I should have said something earlier. What about a smart cow? Anybody ever met a smart cow? How about a stupid cow? Have you ever called a cow stupid? Come on, be honest. Have you ever called a cow stupid? I got to tell a story. That's what I'm all about. I've been listening to stories for so many years, now I get a chance to tell. I went out, I had a demonstration project going on where we were looking at crossbreedings, literally trying to look at a scenario. In the southeast, the typical farm size is 30 to 40 acres. The typical cow herd size is roughly 15 cows. So we set up a demonstration. Is it possible to produce a calf that was acceptable to the market with a cow that could handle the conditions with no supplemental feeding? We did it for about 6 years. Worked pretty good. We just couldn't convince our folks to quit feeding them. They kept, well, it's got to have a bale of hay out there. Cows got to have hay. No, they don't. They have plenty of grass. I went out looking for one of my cows. Oh, she's gone. We sold her. Why'd you sell her? She's stupid. No. You know what stupid is? I'll probably step on some toes here. You know what ignorance is? Ignorance is not knowing any better. Stupid is knowing better and doing it anyway. A cow can't be stupid. So I asked the gentleman, why is that cow so? Well, she's stupid. We had to get rid of her. Why is that? Well, she got out of the squeeze chute 3 times. We couldn't catch her. Okay. And I'm going to pick on Preford a little bit. I really like a Preford chute, but this was one that had the friction bar on it, and they greased it. It don't catch. Why did you do that? Well, it just wasn't moving free enough. That's the idea. She escaped 3 times, and the third time she escaped, she ran through the fence and went to pine trees. The fence is 2 strands of half-inch electric fence tape, not plugged into anything. And she was stupid. No, she wasn't. Cows will make us do weird things. Cows will make us get mad, and probably the toughest thing to do is when you start losing your cool, stop. And go in the house and drink a cup of coffee. No, don't drink a cup of coffee. Caffeine just makes it worse. Get you a glass of ice water or some sort of depressant. And chill for a little bit. Know what you have. Know what you need. Whether you're working cows, whether you're putting cows out on the pasture, whatever you're doing, do you know what you need? You ever work cattle and you get out there and you're missing a syringe or you're missing a needle and, we might do what we got. I watched a guy giving subcutaneous injections one time with a 2-inch needle. I'm going, you're just an injection site lesion looking for a place to happen. Know what you need. Provide the resources to make it work. One of the biggest failures, and now that I'm not just an extension specialist or a teacher, one of those damn administrators, I have to hire folks and I have to provide the resources to make it work. The number one reason why employees quit is they don't have the resources to do their job. The top reason probably for losing a cow is we did not give her the resources to do her job. Provide the resources to make it work. I worked my way through skill part of the time as a carpenter. Anybody ever heard measure twice, cut once? A lot of times it really sounds good. Oh, that cow looks good. I think I need her on. Oh, just think what she could do. And I don't do this very often. I still have a knee-jerk reaction, and I'm way too old to be doing knee-jerk reactions. But now my knee-jerk reactions are on things that are really important. Guns, guitars, toys, tools. Yeah, I make mistakes. But think about that concept. Do you really need it? Does she really need it? Is she really going to fit? And that's my presentation. Do you have any questions? And I know we're going to end early. I tried to break the habit of talking for an hour a long time ago. I think I did it. She doesn't realize it. What kind of camera is that? Oh, crap, that's a Canon. Never mind, you can break it. Nikon, I don't. Also have a camera. Anybody have any questions? How many of you did I make mad? Anybody? Did I step on anybody's toes? Come on, be honest. I didn't do my job then. I got to go back and redo this talk. We're going to start over again. And I'm going to go through it and see if I can't at least get one person a little bit agitated. So do you see, is it a complete fallacy to think about a job description for a cow? Do you think you could sit down tonight after all the festivities and write down just exactly what you think your cow ought to be doing? Do you think it'd make any difference if you wrote it down? See, I'm one of those, if I don't write it down, I'm probably not going to remember it. More, yes, sir.
What's your philosophy on calling cows out of your herd every year? Not everyone's going to make the 12 or...
Perfect question, and it's something I should have mentioned. When I talked about longevity, one of our big problems today is, from a commercial standpoint, I want a cow that's going to last. From a genetic improvement standpoint, the longer I keep them, the less improvement I'm making. How do I make genetic improvement and keep a cow? Now, we've got EPDs that kind of measure longevity a little bit. We've got people trying to come up with that. But that's a tough one. If you want genetic improvement, if that is your goal, is to improve the quality of your cow herd, you're not going to keep a cow on the average of probably 10 years. One way around it, is a concept of identifying the best cows in the herd. If you're going to raise your own heifers, then the standard reason that's, if they're the best cows in the herd, shouldn't that be where your replacements come from? You focus the genetic progress on the good cows. The average, so the probably 60% in the middle, are the ones you breed for market. And the other end are the ones you get rid of. Again, I come from the pig world. We're looking at 50% turnover per year total. But again, they're going through two cycles a year. 25% culling rate every cycle. We're losing 50% of the herd a year. That means we're adding 50% of the herd a year. What have they done by all this genetic improvement in the swine industry? Now we got pigs everywhere. We got sows laying down and having 20 pigs. We got sows that can raise 20 pigs. And now I'm looking at procedures when I teach that part of the class. We may only need 8. But a good question, if you're going to make genetic progress, you got to have turnover. But if you have turnover, you don't have longevity. So that's something you got to look at. Fantastic question. Thank you. You read my mind. Right. So that was hogs. That's not heifers. When you're trying to make genetic progress, typically that's going to be on the seed stock side. You're not taking, you're actually trying to produce something that someone else will buy to use. From a cow-calf, if I'm a commercial cow-calf person, no, I'm not going to turn them over that quick. One thing I am going to do is sort through the cows, though. The other thing we learned in our survey is that farmers and ranchers don't sort cows very well. And we're awfully kind-hearted, and that's a good thing. But we'll keep her way too long. We'll keep her pasture prime. We'll let her go a year without a calf, maybe two, but she's so good. Look at that calf she had 3 years ago. And she's a body condition score 8. She's never going to cycle again, but. So there's some inherent. When we just look at culling for a reason, not genetics, just culling for a reason, you're looking at about 20% culling rate anyway. Just culling animals that aren't fitting. They don't breed within our breeding season. They don't cycle within our breeding season. They don't stick. It may be the bull, it may be the cow, but just normal culling, you're going to get rid of probably 20% a year. And yes, it costs money. Probably costs a little bit more to buy them to raise them than it does to buy them. The jury's still kind of out on that. There's agroeconomists that'll tell you that, you ought to be buying replacement heifers, not raising replacement heifers. But everybody don't buy into that. Another question. Yes, sir. And you brought up another point that I was supposed to mention. See, all these questions, y'all are bringing up the things that I was supposed to talk about. So how does bringing in a new cow affect? It makes a tremendous effect. One of the things we learned when we were looking at thin versus fat cows, a lot of times the thin cows are the high-performing cows. They get nursed down, and I literally watched a cow. She was open. She shouldn't have been there, but she was. Running the other cows away from the hay ring, fighting them off. That's the reason she was a body condition score 8, and the others were 3s. One cow affected the other 15. We didn't color because of temperament. We color because she's a bully. But it does affect, and sometimes you have to have the resources to sort. If I'm bringing in new heifers, I'm not going to run them with a cow herd. I'm going to run heifers together if I can and try to sort out that behavioral difference, because they are going to fight. They're going to establish dominance of some kind. Another thing that I didn't mention is, you ever screened the health before you brought a new cow in? You ever heard of a concept called biosecurity? You ever isolated some before you bring them on the herd, in the herd? How many times have you gone, and don't raise your hand, but you go to an auction market and you buy some heifers and you bring them in and turn them into your cow herd? You just assume they're healthy. Well, they're outside. They're, you know, that's called survival of the fittest. Sometimes they don't breed at all. That's raising their alphas. Sometimes the meanest ones of the bunch are the ones that never cycle. They're focusing on other things. It's a temperament deal. So it's more important to keep like animals together. And there's a lot of different ways you can look at that. Thin cows, pin them off. Feed them different. Fat cows, pin them off if you can. Sort them different. Most important probably is new animals. Animals that are not exposed to the herd for a lot of different reasons. What you mentioned, behavioral side, fighting them off, overly aggressive or not aggressive. I mean, you can take probably the most temperamental alpha animal and put her in a herd of 100. She's not the alpha anymore. You know, about 4 or 5 good butt whoopings and she's on the other end of the pecking order, and you've taken a pretty good cow that could have turned out really good and pretty much wiped out her performance. The neat thing about animals across the board, and again, it's something that I've used on the animal welfare side a bunch. Is there such a thing as free-range cattle? You know, we hear it all the time, free-range chickens. Anybody ever seen free-range chickens? Do you know what a free-range chicken is? Hawk food. Audubon actually wrote an article about a guy that ran all of his broilers outside. He had about 2,000 birds. He was losing 60 to 70% to predators. Audubon did it because it was raptors. We told him before he started, turning a chicken loose is hawk food. Yeah, we have free range. We used to have buffaloes. When we build a fence, they're no longer free range. The more we confine them, the more we take on the responsibility for their care. If we take a cow and put her out in a pasture and everything she needs is there, we've done a good job. But if one thing is restricted, water. We've got surface water and the creek dries up. If we don't have some way to water, that's our responsibility. So the more we confine them, the more we bring them in. We bring heifers into a dry lot to get them synced, to get them bred. We take on the responsibility of feeding them. We have to feed them. If we don't feed them, they don't eat. So the same thing, if we don't understand their temperament, I can take that example of taking that cow and putting her out with 100. And if I've got 200,000 acres, she can run and hide. If I do it in a dry lot pen, chance she might be killed. So excellent concept, but it depends on the location. Whenever we bring new animals in, I'm one of those, isolate them, keep them off to the side, blood test them, see what they have. Don't risk an entire herd for one little trick. And yeah, I like veterinarians sometimes. Ish. Any other questions? Thank you for your attention. Proud to be here. I left in 1982 thinking I'd be back in 5 years. And I came back 33 years later. So I'm glad to be back in the state, glad to be where I'm at, glad to have a lot of good folks to work with, and we're going to do our dead level best to make sure we're providing employees that can fit the same thing as what we're looking for cows. We've got a booth, Tarleton's got a booth, we've got some faculty and some students and maybe some graduate students popping in. Come by and see us and be glad to talk to you one-on-one if you see me. If you haven't figured it out, I don't mind talking to you. And I'm going to have fun doing it. So thank you for being here. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Ousley. The opening general session featuring John O'Leary begins at 10 in the ballroom AB.